For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome. For those new to Ancient Dragons Zengate, I'm Taigen Layton, the teacher here. And I'm very, very happy this evening to welcome, to be giving the talk this evening, Amina Kang, who's a long-time practitioner here, who moved to Los Angeles, I think, to escape the weather that we started to receive today. Or maybe you brought it back.
Yeah, I did.
Amina is a writer and is going to read from us and talk about her new book of fictions, I guess I could say, Creature. And they're short, I would call them meditative pieces, products of her meditation in many ways. They're descriptions of the texture of awareness and of the senses and of awareness of character and of setting. Anyway, they're very interesting. And so thank you very much for coming all the way to Chicago and reading for us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's really nice to be here. I was talking on the... I miss Ancient Dragon a lot, and I was talking on the phone to my mom yesterday, and my friend's six-year-old son was kind of at the door just listening in, and I said, you know, tomorrow I'm going to go to Ancient Dragon, and he just said, what Ancient Dragon? I wasn't even thinking about the fact that to a six-year-old that sounds, you know, so intriguing. I was like, Ancient Dragon Zengate, and he was just... So I usually stand when I read, and I've never sat, you know, at the cushion right after Zazen, so it's really nice. It's a nice experience. So I'm going to read two short stories to start off with, and the first one is called Furniture, Table, Chair, Shelves. There's a tone I want, but I don't know how to get it. A tone in music. I go to concerts. There are always concerts in the summer, trying to find something I can copy down or emulate. When I was a child, I avoided music, but I have a very close connection to it now. I own a farm, but it's been a long time since I've done any work on it. I'm rich from my farm. I can do other things. In the fields, the crops grow almost too tall, their leaves reaching into the gentle air. This makes you question everything. What is air? What is gentle? Also, what is a child? It is horrible to lose someone, and yet that has happened to me. Now I'm alone, but I'm not unhappy. It is hot and beautiful enough on my farm that I feel okay about being rejected. I have tried to make other people reject me so I can relive my trauma in the way a person is supposed to live it. So far it hasn't happened, but just today I saw someone, and I think I can make this person do it. When I see this person, I feel sick, and I think this means I'm on the right track. This is something I concern myself with only in a side pocket sort of way. My priorities are with my compositions. I have thought about writing a farming manual, but I will have to think even more before I attempt it. I do write about my farm, but in a different way. I allow myself to inhabit my farm poetically. In the evenings, I'm calm. I'm hardly ever calm at any other moment. I wear what you think I would, long flowing pants and a button-down denim shirt. My hair is either pulled back in a bun or pull back with barrettes so that my hair hangs onto my shoulders. I used to be a dancer. You can see this in my posture and in the way I carry myself. I'm graceful. I know this, and I'm not afraid to admit it, for it is the great triumph of my life. Also, this helped me with music. Now that I no longer dance, I write music I think other dancers would enjoy. My compositions are complex and moody. They're not pretty, but they allow the listener a deeper relationship to my farm. At the end of the summer, I will hold my own concert in this place. My talents extend in every direction. Farmer, possible writer of a farming manual, composer, dancer, possible musician. Now you understand why there is no time for me to actually farm. Dressed in the way I've told you, I stroll about the fields and often write off of them. The palm trees have their own relationship to air, and it is exquisite to see. One can only imagine how their fronds take it in and change because of its presence. The movement is very slow. This slowness is good for me to witness. One part of a frond is pointing up, even while the rest of the points move to the left or stay entirely still. Then there is the river, moving in its own slow way. To watch the movement of the river sometimes means lying down next to it to get close to the miniature swells and waves. In the evenings when I am not strolling about, I'm in my house, cradled by the land. I sit down at my desk and work. I can't tell you what I look like when I'm working because I don't know. My desk is huge and beautiful, very expensive. How could I not want to work there? The wood is unfinished, but in a particular kind of way. When it's touched, it's smooth. The compositions come easily, simply because I am cradled and I am able to express this through music. I am able to picture the dancers on the farm and compose songs that are right and true for them to dance to. I am waiting for the right time, for when I can have a recital here. I will have to work for months before this can happen, because I haven't yet matured into my craft. I haven't matured into any of them. But my relationship to everything I do is serious. You can't imagine how near I get to my work. This person, the one with whom I would like to relive my rejection, is always in town. This person must live here now, or be on a very long vacation. Sitting for hours in the cafe, not working at all, or sometimes sitting in the rocking chair on the porch of the post office, but also riding a bike or running along a path. This person is more relaxed than I am, but not healthier. No one in this area is healthier than me. Imagine trying to compose something at the beginning of summer. Tonight I am an insect, a book, a very large plant. Do you know what that's like? It means I am light, pensive, and then finally bigger than life. The one time I engaged in a sitting meditation, my hands grew. They were huge. This was only a sensation. Here in this room, I have enough love for everyone, even the men and the one woman who work on my farm. There is something I want to get through to you, but I don't know how to do it. There is something I want to communicate about my life. I have not always lived on this farm. I grew up in a city where I was taken everywhere I wanted to go. As a young woman, I went to see aberrant things, and this upset my family. I went to dance classes, where I was introduced to music. On cold autumn mornings, the rain beat upon the windows, and I exulted in my position in the class. I loved to dance. I even loved to wait on the floor until it was my turn to move across it. Sometimes it is sensual just to be here, taking in the land, letting it wash over me, In certain moments, I am a wild boar. I barely need another. At the first concert of the summer season, I lie in the grass. Those closer to the stage sit in seats, and though I can afford to sit with them, I prefer it here. I have always loved grass. The musicians are far away on the stage, but there are things about them that stand out all the same. They wear dark skirts or pants and light shirts. They hold their instruments close to their bodies, or, if the instrument is on the ground, they draw near it, hovering just above. I haven't yet put myself in the right proximity to an instrument. I have held a fiddle too far from my body. The music is soft, then loud, too loud. I look up at the sky. I had no idea it would be such a noisy concert, and it hurts my ears. If I picture dancers now, they are completely in crisis. They are violent criminals, wearing costumes dyed a deep red. To picture this makes me nervous, as if I will be attacked before I get back to the farm. And of course, there is nothing for me to copy down. When I hold a recital, the music will be soft. So soft, it will be hard to hear it. My talent lies in gentleness, even if I'm not a gentle person. Walking through the streets when the concert is over, the warm air pressing delicately against the night, I feel my future. The person I want to reject me is standing next to a palm. "Hello," I call gently. "What?" the person answers. The shadow of the palm is deep. It's so warm and beautiful. It's always warm here. That's true. My farm is a bit farther down the road. Would you like to see it? This person takes so long to answer, I'm afraid nothing will be said. But, finally, I don't visit the farms of strangers. I breathe out an audible sigh, like I have been taught to do in yoga. But I don't think this person understands anything like that. This person is gone before I know what's happened, leaving me completely alone. What I appreciate most about compositions, dance, and the air is what I appreciate about people. To go out and meet them, you must go incredibly far. That's one story. A drink of water and read one more. This one is called Words Come to Me. Even though I don't write stories, I create them in my actions. I create a feeling I don't believe in, and then I act on that feeling. I wear my puffy coat out into the snow. I walk through my neighborhood and look at the antique shops. Snow and antiques are good together. I sit in a warm place to read. The one time in my life I had to escape from something, I created a story about the longest February of my life. Here, I want to show you something. It is several cats. Like a creature that won't get down from the bed, words are coming to me. Here I am on the street with so many people. It's beautiful to be alive, to go into a floral shop in winter and look at fine plants sitting darkly in their pots. To be among a crowd hurts me. "Let me see this plant," I say to the florist, and she lets me look at it for quite some time while she works in the back. It's strange how long I stay there. Now words come to me. I have not asked them. Sighing, I take my notebook out of my puffed pocket and write the words down in my best hand. Though I will never be a writer, the words allow me to study a certain kind of writing. If I close my eyes, I will see my written self staring back at me. If I walk to the lake, something will be revealed in the waves, frozen up in their certainty. Did I tell you the waves freeze here? I will feel something I don't actually feel. Then I will fall asleep in my bed like the waves. So much happens when I am inside my mind, but I still haven't left the floral shop. I have not left the fine plants. Remember when I was kidnapped by our master and forced to be a part of his life in a way I never would have wished for? He took me to a dairy farm, expecting me to like it. He took me to a fancy party where the other women looked at me with rage and jealousy. How could they want that life? My notebook is too modern. When I hold it up next to myself, it contrasts greatly. Still, I am safe now to look at antique furniture and shop windows instead of sitting on it, to know that no one will handcuff me to a wrought iron gate. My desk is waiting for me, softly, softly the books. In my apartment, I draw the bath water. I've been outside all day with people, and now it is time for me to be alone. Taking baths has always been important for me, especially in winter. I'm more receptive then. I can feel myself going out and then coming back in. It's hard not to feel connected to yourself when you're in a hot bath. I had good friends. I had you. We served food to the family we worked for. When you set the table or ladled out the soup, I looked at you lovingly. I looked at all of you this way. I wasn't able to stop myself from doing it. Once I was beaten for standing there doing nothing while everyone else worked. It's just that I wanted to really see them, I said during the beating. The bath warms me. I will be able to emerge into the room as a warm person. They're not your real friends, my master's wife said, our mistress. It's too late, I thought. I know the warmth of love. I watched her pink face while she beat me. Then she pushed me onto the floor. Down there, all I had were pointy black shoes to look at. I hadn't realized how many people, how many shoes, were in that room. When you lie in a field with a friend and tell each other stories about your lives, when you've explored friendship, it's impossible to forget. It comes back when you're lying on a cold floor. It comes back when you're lying in the bath. Lovingly, Juliet, blank page, edited by Anne, Women of the Rural Areas. This is written on a piece of paper on my desk. If you sit in my chair and look down at my notebook, my words are waiting for you. Myself, alone, in my bed, is a story. What direction did you head in when we scattered from that house, like the bits of dry grass that we were? I read books now to bring myself to a feeling. When I walk down the street, I'm never sure if I interact with others or if they interact with me. I eat warm food, things other people wouldn't consider eating. Even in winter, the waves unfreeze, falling upon the cold beach. I wear one color to signify something. It's been said that you can signal many things in this way, like the words you're most likely to write down, and even your education. My bookshelves reach from the floor to the ceiling, towering over my small apartment. A table sits in front of the shelves. This is where I prepare my food. The kitchen and the living room are practically the same. I want you to know where I am, what I look like when I am here. I want you to see what I look like when I eat. Another time I was beaten, I was sick with the flu. our mistress held me down while our master whipped me with his belt. This happened on the porch because she wanted their neighbors to see us. It was December, and I was shivering magnificently. Later, our master spoke to me in hushed tones. He said, "Next week I'll take you out again, when you're better. Would you like to listen to music? We can go to the mountains." He always played music with banjos in it. He was always trying to soothe me. The only one who could was another servant. Only once did I see you being beaten. It was because you had tried to leave the house without permission. Our mistress asked a male servant to beat you, and he did. What else could he have done? Bloody, you sat on the back steps while a kitten tried to crawl up your leg. You let it, but you didn't acknowledge its presence. I stood in the window looking out at you for a long time. Finally, it got dark, and then I couldn't see you anymore. Those years hardly resemble this one, or the ones in which I was a child, but all of it equals my life, making one ragged crawl across time. Now it's morning. Here I am on a walk to the lake. This is real. I wear headphones to clear out the feeling I had in the night and to change the lake to a softer place. I listen to music that helps me understand something about myself and about the lake. I want to understand the food I eat and why I like antiques and snow. Someone told me that writers are more important to me than they are to other people. Oddly, they were important to the people who own that house, and I'm still trying to reconcile that. Once, in their winter, our mistress hung a laurel wreath on the front door. I had always found that door beautiful, with its wood and glass, its richness. With the wreath, its beauty deepened, and this made me feel sick. I'll buy something simple for my own door, from the floral shop that is warmer and brighter than any house I've been in. I am trying to show the mind. I cannot write anything else except sentences.
That's that story.
So I thought I would just read two, and I didn't really prepare a talk. I didn't know if I could. And I think I would rather talk with you and not to force you into having any questions or responses or just, you know, things that came up while I was reading. But Taigen had asked me to maybe talk about or think about my practice of writing as it relates to my practice of meditation, and there is a very natural connection, so I could talk about that. And it's actually interesting because I've in the last few months I've been enjoying writing about narrative and writing about story and writing about story more in terms of space of so I've been writing about literature and landscape painting and kind of comparing them, and but in I think two of those essays that I've written, I've just sort of naturally started talking about meditation, and I also have been having a conversation with another writer that's going to be published this week, and there's kind of in that conversation some things about meditation kind of come up that are interesting. So I could go into some of that, but maybe I'll just see if you have any just questions or just thoughts or, you know, that came up while I was reading.
I have a comment. So at the end of the first story, some of the final lines were about how it takes so much effort to really get to know an instrument or dance or a farm or what have you. But I kind of had a aha moment there because it was actually in the second story, when you were, you know, in the beginning, it was very poetic and beautiful. And it occurred to me then that it is very hard to get close to people, but deep art is a sort of a way to have that happen instantaneously for myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I don't have to know a particular painter personally, but it can happen in, you know, a flash, a deep connection.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, just to say, well, I think so, and a lot of the time when people ask what I write about or, you know, what my story is about, I think, you know, what I say and what I believe is that they're a lot about closeness and distance, and the kind of pleasure and pain that can come from that, or joy and suffering. But I always kind of add that the closeness and distance isn't just between characters, you know, but it's also like a narrator or a character and, you know, herself or mm-hmm. himself, and then also, you know, a character and a setting, you know, a landscape. And I think the same with, you know, and, you know, with that story, music and dance and, you know, kind of having them all in that same space of difficulty in a way, or, you know, that you can be close to, you know, something other, that a character can be close to something other than another character, that it's there with, you know, even objects sometimes, you know, like art or, yeah.
Well, I'm interested in how you started the piece. Does it come up with the voice of the character first, or do you have a backstory that comes to you and the voice comes out of that, or does a phrase come and it all grows from there? How do you do that?
It usually, and I, you know, I hear a lot of writers say this, but it often comes from a scrap of something, and whether that's, it might be for me like two words, you know, a phrase or one sentence. It often can be a setting, you know. So I have, you know, in that piece, the first piece that I read with the tropical farm was very much there for me before anything else was, you know, and just those tall plants. And so then, you know, the story grew from there. At times it's been, sometimes it is a voice. I mean, it's interesting because I read it at school maybe 2 years ago, and during a question and answer period, then I realized, you know, I do start off, it takes me a really long time. Basically, you know, I start off with a small vague thing that basically, the process of writing the story is for that thing to become clearer and clearer until, you know, the story is maybe done when that thing is clear and these other pathways have gone out from it. And sometimes that is a voice, that there's this vague sense of a voice that I have to uncover and get to, you know, for the story to grow. But back to, you know, when I said I was at the school and there was a Q&A, I realized, you know, it's sort of funny because the narrative voice in many of my stories is very similar. So I find it funny that it can take me, you know, like a month to find that voice each time, you know. But yeah, so it's something small that I can barely see, but that I'm also very drawn to. It's not just like some vague thing that's like, okay, here's, you know, but it's something I really want to get to, that I want to be clearer. And that's the sort of struggle of writing. And I never have a story beforehand.
One thing that strikes me, you were talking about, and Paul was talking about in terms of art, but studying the terrain or the landscape and looking at the textures of that, I felt, but also, this feels to me somehow like Dogen talking about studying the self.
Mm-hmm.
That there's the voice of the narrator, which I understand is not you, and sort of it is you, but it's not you.
Yeah.
But it's also the narrator in these stories is studying the self, is looking at the different pieces of something that's within the narrator's voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different terrains in there.
Mm-hmm. And I think for me personally is, it's interesting, and this is something I've been kind of thinking about a lot, you know, for a while. I'm a short story writer, and yet I'm not necessarily, it's not the story I'm interested in necessarily. I have started to think that maybe I use story or I use narrative to get to something else, to get to some kind of space of something, or, you know, sometimes it has to do with a situation, you know, that does happen through story or plot, you know, between two characters, but that often it is more, you know, that it is a space in which things are possible, like studying a self, but without studying a self, you know, without, but then also, you know, most of the things I write are in first person, you know, so there's this, in a way there's, though it's not, you know, myself necessarily, and there's some of myself in there, it's I do sort of, it's interesting to me sometimes, like, okay, why do you always write from a place of the I, you know, what does that mean? And I have a story in this book that I didn't read called Attached to a Self, and it's about the summer that I spent at Tassajara, and it's not named that because I think, you know, I should be attached to a self. It was just more kind of pointing to the struggle of that, you know, of not being attached to a self. It's interesting. I read last month at Naropa University at their reading series, which I was excited to do. But it was interesting. The director of the writing program came out afterwards, and she was like, "Your narrators, are they a little off?" but it's not like psychological realism that I'm looking for. It's not like I'm trying to show the truth of a character or I'm starting to feel like I use elements of fiction, but I don't know that it has to be a bad thing, but you know.
It seems to me that there definitely is something subtle going on in both of your stories, that even though you may not specifically refer to it, that there is something more. And my sort of question to you is that there seems to be an underlying concept or theme in both of your stories about ebb and flow and contrast between situations, whether it be comedy or tragedy, mm-hmm. ebb and flow and black and white, the yin and yang. Would you say that that's accurate to say that that's the type of imagery that you're going for?
I think it's there for sure. But I don't start with anything, so it's not necessarily a matter of me going for it. And maybe this is how, you know, writing can connect to meditation or zazen, is that I often feel like I write to find out what's inside my mind, you know, so, and it might not be that surprising, you know, it can be, like, once I get there, I'll be like, oh, of course, like, this is part of my life, this is something, like, I'm always thinking about, but it's that, yeah, that's
basically
one of the...
Basically, yeah, what I'm trying to get at is just that in the process of writing, the actual creation of the narrative in and of itself is some way a type of therapy, you know, if you will. I don't know if I can put it any better than that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Libby?
Your style is so unusual. When I understood that you're coming, I looked you up and I wanted to read, you know, to get some, and I was so struck by it, and hearing you read so part of the question I was having was sort of, you know, how did your style develop, because it is so personal, and like, I feel like it's so brave in a way and unusual to follow your own sense of things or your own, you know, the development of this seed, you know, to really let it grow in the way that you want it to, you know, that doesn't fit typical narrative arcs or, you know, expectations around writing. It's like, I mean, when I was first reading, I was like, what am I reading? So, but then I hear you talk a little bit, and I'd be interested to hear you talk about that, but I, then hearing you talk a little bit, this makes me think about, you know, this meditation piece is like, the part of what it feels like you're, that the writing is doing is, what I was getting from it was a sense of the kind of idiosyncratic quality of existence, you know, of life, that life doesn't follow, you know, that's part of what's just unsatisfying about many stories, I feel like, in movies. It's kind of, it's too A and then B and then C, yeah, and you're not, you know. And the way you write, sort of, you just get the sense of, like, you know, life is just sort of all these moments and juxtapositions and experiences that are hard to even name, but sometimes they are easy to name. Sometimes there's words that fit perfectly for an experience, and then, you know, but then things shift, and yeah, so anyway, that feels like a very unusual thing to be able to get across through writing.
Thank
so
you.
I don't know if that matches sort of what your process has been.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, you know, I feel part of a, like a lineage of writer, you know, there are definitely writers I feel probably very influenced by, you know, so.
Like who?
Well, my two favorite writers are Marguerite Duras and Clarice Lispector. And so, I mean, I don't think so much, you know, when I'm writing, I don't tend to think like I'm doing something new, but you know, that I'm, you know, it's like a combination of these things that are springing out of you and kind of a conversation you're having with, other writers. And I definitely think that I write because when I read, or if I, you know, or sometimes when I watch movies or experience other things, it's like I just feel that, you know, compelled to, or, you know, sort of pushed out to respond in some way. And so I think it, you know, and that goes for kind of writers who are not around anymore, to, you know, like peers or contemporary writers that I know whose work I really like. And not that there's like a direct conversation necessarily, you know, going on, but that I do just feel sort of also rooted there, you know, in that conversation. And yeah.
I was really struck, you were talking about the distance and proximity. I was struck by the narrator's voice, especially in the first story, that it was so first person, and yet she was so distant from herself.
Yeah.
So it's very first person, but it's almost like she's describing someone else when she's describing herself. And she seemed, at points in the story, the narrator seemed very attuned to that. I am this kind of person. That sense of herself as a construction of of herself. And obviously I wonder if you could talk a little bit. It seems to me a lot of parallels there from Zazen, sort of watching yourself. I wonder if you could maybe tease out some of those connections a little bit more.
I mean, it's interesting. There are some things I can say about it, and part of it remains mysterious to me. You know, like I realized when I was kind of deciding what I would read tonight, and, you know, with the second story, there are those lines about I eat things other people wouldn't, or, you know, I eat warm food. Everyone eats warm food, you know? So in a way, like, where did that line come from and what does it mean? You know, like, what if someone asked me, like, what does that mean? Like, you eat warm food, or, you know? So since I'm not really starting from a place of knowing, like, I often, you know, kind of surprise myself. And there's like for me to even continue to look at, like where did that come from and what does it mean? But I think that I think it, you know, it is, you know, as I was saying, that thing of kind of sometimes I feel like I'm, you know, not necessarily in a bad way, but it's like I'm running the eye into the ground, you know, the and in the kind of writing community that I'm part of, there's, you know, there's a lot of criticism, like it's sort of, and that's also sort of interesting connection to, you know, to Zazen or meditation, that there's a lot of criticism of that constant eye, you know, like that, you know, like work that's written that's all about like expressing how someone feels or, you know, what happened to them or...
There is one approach to Zen, which is you run the eye to the ground.
Yeah. Oh, oh, really? That's, yeah. Good. That's good to know.
Trying to get rid of all that.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. And it's, there's you know, there are a lot of writers, kind of like these writers who are part of this conceptual writing movement who, you know, they're sort of very against the eye and just sort of, I don't, you know, so I just think they're interesting questions about subjectivity, but I do ask myself that given that there are like lots of annoyances with the eye in a way, like what does it mean to, but I don't know if that's entirely answering your question just about those, because I know there are the details in that story, like, and also there's this sort of direct address to the reader in that moment, like I wear what you think I would, or, you know, I just wear these things and I have this desk and, but, you know, in some ways, I think that there have been things that I've wanted to get to in writing or that, like for a while, like with my first book, I felt like, and some of these things might be present in this book too, but I felt like I always wrote about awkwardness between people, you know, so it was always the distance. Like I'm interested in closeness and distance, but for so long, like it was just easier to sort of write about distance and then also, I sort of started in a few of my stories going into like these brattier characters or, you know, sort of brattier voices or which, I don't know why, like that's been sort of maybe just because it's different, you know, than what I had been doing. But now I, you know, so I, but also that said, I think that it was also hard for me at first to write, like a certain kind of sincere character or a character who would say like, you know, like in the first book, I don't think I could have written about, someone being rejected or, you know, yeah, but I'm afraid I just sort of went all around your question and didn't totally address it.
I was fascinated by the character looking for someone to reject her.
Yeah, but that's, see that, this is a matter of, this kind of goes back, you know, to when I was saying that I felt, you know, kind of in conversations sometimes with my forebears, you know, writers. I don't know if anyone's read The Ravishing of Lowell Stein by chance, the Marguerite Duras novel. It's probably my favorite novel of all time, and it's about a reliving of a rejection, but with a person coming back, like, years later. And so that, you know, that story is indebted to that novel, and yeah.
So, any other comments or questions for Amina?
And if there are not, I can say one last thing if you want.
Please.
Okay. That is, and the, you know, I was having this written back and forth email conversation with another writer that's going to be published, and she kind of brought up right away this idea of spaciousness or slowness in my stories. She started the conversation off, and she just asked like what kind of resonances that had for me with the stories or experience. And I said that I've kind of, you know, noticed for a while that I'm very attracted to books and movies that are pretty slow, that, you know, other people might be kind of tortured by, or that I'm also very tortured by, but for some reason like them, you know, there's this sort of buildup of tension or conflict that doesn't get resolved. Going back to that arc, I've never been that interested in the, like, tension, conflict, like, fight, resolution, you know, like, it's, but more like, you know, what if you spend time just in that moment of, you know, tension or conflict, or you spend time in this part of it, or in that moment I also started talking about Zazen, and specifically, you know, this, you know, Soto Zen Buddhism, which is, you know, the tradition I know, where, you know, I'm very interested in the fact that I would call the ceremony before sitting very momentous, you know, like it feels very energizing and kind of, you know, important, and there's all this sort of energy building up to, you know, you could say, like, at the most basic level, to sit down and look at a wall where you see nothing, or you see everything because you're seeing your mind, and you know, so it's just interesting to me that these things come up, you know, kind of naturally in conversations. And she said, okay, you've talked about the wall, but I'm interested in the ceremony. You know, if you're talking about your writing in that way, then where is the ceremony situated in a narrative? Is it outside the narrative? You know, can the reader see the ceremony, or is it something that, you know, sort of builds up and then? And it was a good question for me, because I don't think I would have thought of, you know, what occurred to me afterward. I don't think I would have gotten to. And I realized, like, no, I think the narrative is the ceremony in a way, that it's, you know, it's a ceremony just to get to this other place, you know, this sort of space of something, you know, whether it is something that's quiet or weird, or I don't know, you know, some other space that then you can kind of just sit with a little bit, or... Thank you for listening.
Thank you for speaking.